The past few months have been rough for local jazz. Two promising newer venues, 1911 Main and Cafe Augusta in Lenexa, have shut down. And at Jardine's, one of the city's most celebrated venues, a dispute between the owner and employees led to a boycott by musicians. The restaurant then closed its doors, and its future remains up in the air.
Restaurants and bars in Kansas City come and go all the time, but what's the significance when a dedicated jazz venue closes down? What does it take to have a successful jazz venue? And what should artists do to keep the scene vibrant? This week, the Casey Current staff teamed up to ask some of the city's best-known musicians and music writers these questions. Here's what they said.
My name is Mark Lowry. I'm a pianist from Kansas City, Missouri. I grew up north of the river, and I used to, when I finally got my car, I went down to the Majestic Steakhouse to go listen to Joe Cartwright, you know, and drink coffee and eat cheesecake and feel cultured, and I'd listen to these great musicians and then go home and practice, because after hearing these guys, you really have to. And so I would just try to learn more and more about the different places in town, the 18th and Vine District, the Phoenix, and Jardines. You know, I really felt comfortable and at home at Jardines. It was a fantastic stage and a great piano and good people. I used to go there to practice when I was in high school, you know, after I got out of school, because I always had the most fantastic piano of any club in town outside of, you know, UMKC or the concert halls like the Folly. I would just go down and hey, do you mind? And, you know, the owner would be like, well, all right, you know, and I just kind of just hammer a few things out and just, you know, it was kind of, in some ways, as a child, still a child, it was kind of a fantasy. You know, I always got to practice at the jazz club, and it was always my goal. It's like, one day I'll play here on a Saturday night, you know. And, you know, a few years later, you know. I think that, you know, maybe we're talking about a little more than a decade ago where the Plaza was more of a place to be than it is now. There wasn't as much in Kansas City. So geographically, it made sense. From my perspective, just having a good stage, good lights, and a good piano. As a piano player, a really high-quality piano in a jazz club is not the most common of things. So that's what I personally gravitated towards. The situation at that club is complicated, and even I don't know all the pieces. I wasn't a business partner. I was really an employee, a musician employee, that was very close friends with other employees, and what I've really come to love about Kansas City the more I travel is that we have a wealth of common decency and manners towards each other in a lot of respects. And when I saw that more and more wasn't happening, and kind of an explosion of a lot of unfortunate business decisions that affected close friends of mine, I just had to walk away.
My name is Bill Brownlee. I'm a freelance writer and author of PlasticSax.com, a blog about Kansas City jazz. The shuttering of Jardines is particularly unfortunate for the hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are unwilling to go to the city's best jazz club, the Blue Room, because of its location. There's still a terrible misperception that the Jazz District isn't safe. I know dozens of people who call themselves jazz fans who have never been to the Blue Room. Jardines was a wonderful club, and most everything about it was good, but it was the safe, traditional place to go hear jazz. Now, with the Blue Room accepted, people who want to hear jazz will have to work a little bit harder to find it. The Kansas City jazz scene is going through this transition in terms of its audience. A younger, more open-minded audience is being developed, while the older audience, the people who remember a time when jazz actually was popular music, is naturally going away. This transition makes it difficult for a club like Jardines or 1911 Main to stay open. Yet, there's an opportunity for a club that is willing to cater to people in their 20s and 30s to thrive if they book jazz musicians with an interest in hip-hop and R&B and rock music as well. It's difficult to get a skinny jeans wearing 20-something into a upscale dinner club that features jazz like the Majestic. coming back on a regular basis. Clubs like the Record Bar, where people are allowed to stand, walk around, eat pizza, I think that's the future of jazz venues.
My name is Herman Mahari, and I'm a trumpet player. I play mainly with a group called Diverse. The troubles at Jardine's really might have been significant to a lot of people. Not really to me, because I didn't really play there enough for it to be an economical problem for myself. And I kind of made sure like that was so, because in my vision and my career, yes, I do want to play in Kansas City. Yes, I do enjoy Kansas City. But if my livelihood is dependent on one club, or like significantly dependent on one club, I think that speaks for like my career in a sense. I think from the artist side, not having concern for the audience. I don't think you have to sacrifice your art to be concerned about the audience. But if you purposefully don't care what the audience thinks, well, they're probably not going to really care what you think, you know? And I think so artists kind of need to lose that self-entitlement. Oh, I've put so many hours in the practice room. People need to hear me. Or, you know, I think people got to realize that, you know, in order to be a successful musician, and if you want to make money doing it, you got to make money doing it. And it's not going to just happen because, you know, you play great here locally. That has to be a given, you know. Playing great has to be a given, you know. The question is, what more can you do to make a successful business out of yourself?
My name's Larry Kopitnik. A couple of years ago, I guess it's been about 2.5 years ago now, started a blog. The marketing end is where I see most of these establishments at their weakest. There are a certain number of people who will come because it's jazz, but first and foremost, the place is a restaurant or bar. That's how it makes its money, and it needs to sell that experience and excel at that experience to get an audience to come back and come for the music as well. 1911 Maine came and went fairly quickly as a jazz establishment. And I think there were a lot of reasons for that. But part of it was because few people, for most of the time they were in existence, knew they were there. They bought ads in a publication that didn't really reach the demographic who was going to come out and hear their music. Jardine's, on the other hand, and of course, they're not closed because they weren't drawing people. They're closed because musicians are boycotting them. But Jardine's had an excellent online calendar. They did a good job of sending out emails. They did a good job of building a mail list and reaching out to the people who were interested in the music and interested in coming there. They had a solid social media presence on Facebook. They did a good job of reaching the audience, and the audience came. The Blue Room is doing an excellent job of marketing these days. They brought in a new marketing director who's really utilizing social media, reaching out on Facebook, building a list, sending out emails regularly, doing a good job of reaching a broader demographic, really promoting the big events that they have there and the big names that they have there better than the Blue Room has promoted in the past.
My name is Tim Whitmer. Well, I think what is working in the jazz environment is clubs like the Phoenix. The Phoenix is a tremendous amount of fun. It's got an excellent staff. They support the music. They listen to the music. There's it's set up to hear good music. I think places like the Blue Room, set up to listen to music, has world-class music. You know, I think we're at a really significant point right now with openings of cultural institutions like the Kauffman Center. There are more and more big acts, Sprint Center, coming to town, and I think there'll be offshoots of different clubs. I look for clubs to build up around the Kauffman Center area. I look for more clubs in the Crossroads. I look for the West Bottoms. I think more of the restaurants like Accursos that are deciding that they love to have this kind of music, and they're seeing how well it works. I think it's going to be a really positive time.
Probably most importantly, a listening audience, an audience that has came there to listen. Some places are not conducive for me to play around town because they don't listen. And if I'm hired to write some background music, that's one thing, but I don't really play background music per se. Then you have the staff and management. Management sets the tone of how the staff is going to respond at the door, behind the bar, or your servers. Management sets the tone in terms of the policy toward musicians. Is there a musician's menu? Or can you order off the regular menu at a discount? Can you start a tab? Things like this mean a lot, you know. Not that you're going to try to drink them dry, but it's nice to know that, you know, you can have a few drinks during the night. At the same token, the musicians need to have their etiquette together to know how to tip and compensate the people who serve them. Because at the same time, you need the whole picture to make an event. You need the musicians, you need the wait staff, you need the bartender, and you need a good manager who knows who to hire. Give everybody a chance. You know, I think everybody deserves a chance to fail. You know, so if you give somebody a gig and they don't draw anybody, what's the incentive for the manager to bring you back? You know, that's the reality of this business, you know. It's about getting butts in the seat and building a following. So if the artist gets a chance, and a good manager will give somebody a chance, and a good manager will give somebody they believe in several chances, because it takes time to build up a following, especially new up and coming artists. You know, the more established artists here in town, they have a responsibility to upgrade their repertoire over the years. I think the problem but a lot of the artists is that they need to work on their repertoire. You know, you go to see them and year after year, decade after decade, they're playing the same stuff, you know. And if you can imagine working with these guys or girls or whatever, it's got to be, you know, the thrill is gone. You're going through the motions. I'm sorry. They need to work on their repertoire and bring new material to the stage, you know. It's not that hard to learn a new song and work it out, you know. I don't care how big of a fan you are of an artist. You want to hear them stretch out and try to do something new. And I think that's a big problem here in Kansas City.
That was alto saxophonist, composer, and UMKC professor Bobby Watson. We also spoke to pianist Mark Lowry, plastic sax blogger Bill Brownlee, trumpet player Herman Mahari, KC Jazzlark blogger Larry Kapitnik, and pianist and bandleader Tim Whitmer. Our story was produced by Alex Smith.
Casey Currents is produced by Sylvia with assistant producer Alex Smith. Kayla Regan is our intern. Our theme music is by Approach. And as always, I'm Susan Wilson.
And I'm Sylvia Maria Gross.